In the year 1994, six gay men would die at the hands of a man who worked his way up and down I-95 on the East Coast. The victims were all beaten and strangled with one serial killer signature. They all had something shoved down their throat. He eluded police for months and was only caught, according to him, because he stayed in one place for too long. This is the story of Gary Ray Bowles, the I-95 killer. Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Pothorn. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Everybody.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome.
You're getting a little more creative each time. You're going to run out of things to say for welcome, welcome, welcome. You're going to have to start saying it in a different language.
Wait till I do Kermit the Frog.
Oh, no. Please don't do Kermit the Frog.
I know.
We're glad you're with us again this week, wherever you're listening. Like, rate, and review. You can go to Facebook and join our closed Facebook group.
Yep.
The H2H In-Laws and Outlaws. We've had a lot of people who've come over that were former Kentucky Fried Cousins. We're keeping it all in the family.
Yep.
Come on over to the In-Laws and Outlaws. We're having a lot of fun over there. And I always post extra stuff in there. So you're always in the know.
I think they're having more fun over there than we are.
It's true. Some of the memes that get posted over there. That's my fun place. I go there and laugh every day.
Yeah.
You guys are amazing. We love you guys. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate anybody who downloads the podcast and listens on a regular basis. We really do.
Yep.
I am going to jump into this one today. I have so many sources. I watched two documentaries on this, and I knew this guy's name, and I knew the I-95 killer, but I didn't put the two together because he's not always called the I-95 killer, but he's definitely a serial killer. And it's interesting because he does all of his killing in a matter of months. He does all of this just in a very short period of time. But it's an interesting case. Before we get started, I want to thank some sources: Murderpedia, the Florida Times Union, Wikipedia, casetext.com, the AP News, Inside Edition, the Washington Post, The Mark of a Serial Killer, which is a documentary, The Killer Speaks, which is also another documentary, the Tampa Tribune, the Athol Daily News.
Athol?
I knew you were going to do that, and I already started laughing.
You're stupid Athol.
That's right. And the Greenville News, and last but not least, The Big Book of Serial Killers by Jack Rosewood. There are two volumes. If you don't have them, go get them. They're really good. I'll post a link in the show notes.
I just want to know when they're going to come out with a Serial Killers for Dummies.
I think there probably is one.
Okay.
There's serial killer coloring books. Jeez. I'm waiting for like a serial killer cookbook or something like that. Maybe I should do that. That's something I should do in my spare time, like I have spare time.
Right.
Speaking of, let's do this. Let's kick this off. Here we go. Gary Ray Bowles was born on January 25th, 1962, to Francis Carroll Price Bowles and William Franklin Bowles in Clifton Forge, Virginia, but was raised and spent his childhood in Rupert, West Virginia, which is a tiny little town that's east of Beckley, West Virginia.
Okay.
And at the 2010 census, there were 942 people living in Rupert, West Virginia. So he comes from a teeny tiny small coal mining town.
Yeah.
Now, Gary Ray's dad was a coal miner, and he died of black lung disease on July 22, 1961, 6 months before Gary Ray was even born. And Gary Ray does have an older brother. But after Gary Ray's dad passes away, his mother, Frances, is going to remarry a few times. And according to Frances, Gary Ray had a good childhood up until he was about 7 or 8.
Okay.
because his first stepfather beat him and his older brother. Mm. And when his mom divorced him and remarried a man named Chet, the second stepfather, well, he was just as physically abusive to him and his brother and his mother. He would often beat the boys and her with a belt or his fists.
So what you're saying is she could really pick him.
Yeah. And apparently she just had a whole string of these. Wow. But Chet, stepfather number two, was a violent alcoholic, and the beatings were really regular for Gary Ray and his brother and his mother. And Chet even put Gary Ray's mom in the hospital on more than one occasion.
Wow.
Now, by the time Gary Ray is 8 or 9, by the way, a lot of people just call him Gary, but he's from West Virginia, and I know he goes by Gary Ray, so I'm going to call him Gary Ray the whole time.
They all have two names.
Yeah, what are you trying to say?
Billy Ray, Gary Ray,
What are you trying to say, honey? What are you trying to say about my people? I'm not from West Virginia, but what are you trying to say about the people in the South? It's okay to have more than one name.
I think it's great. My mom used to call me Robert Jean all the time.
Robbie Jean.
No, Robert Jean. That was only when I was in trouble.
Yeah, I'm going to start using that. You're in trouble a lot.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. He's not. But by the time Gary Ray is 8 or 9, he's already experimenting with sniffing glue and huffing paint just to get high.
Wow.
And if you believe Gary Ray, because there's, you know, two sides to every coin. If you believe Gary Ray, he was sexually abused by the time he was 8 or 9 as well. I don't know if that was a stepfather or somebody else.
Yeah.
But he's really trying his best to escape his home life and his feelings. Now, by the time Gary Ray makes it to the 8th grade, he's basically dropped out of school. And the beatings continued, and he and his brother were both so tired of stepdad Chet's physical abuse that when Gary Ray is about 13, he and his brother gang up on Chet, and they decide they're going to beat the hell out of him.
Oh, wow.
They give him a taste of his own medicine, and at one point, Gary Ray was beating Chet's head in with a brick.
Holy cow. Well, if you're going to do something, do it right.
And this is when his mother, Frances, steps in and says, you got to stop. You're going to kill him. You're going to kill Chet. And according to Gary Ray, he told his mom, it's either him or me. Pick.
Wow.
One of us. One of us is going. Which one's it going to be? And his mother picked Chet.
Ooh.
And Gary Ray put his belongings in a garbage bag and walked away from his family at 13 years old and never looked back.
Hmm.
It's 1975.
Wow.
Can you imagine being 13 years old and being on your own in 1975?
It was a bad week to stop sniffing glue.
Yeah.
There's my movie reference. I got it in early.
You did get it in early. So the first man who picks up little Gary Ray tells him that he could go around to different places and allow men to give him oral sex, and they would pay him, and he would make some money doing this.
Wow.
And in fact, that is exactly what little Gary Ray starts to do. And the draw for him, apparently, was that gay men were procuring him because he was a heterosexual boy, and they would perform oral sex on him.
Wow.
It was a turn on for them. So little Gary Ray, he's homeless, he's living on his own, and he makes money becoming a male prostitute to older men. But his $20 a blowjob career isn't enough for him to have a roof over his head. He never gets a permanent place to live. So he's homeless most of his teenage life.
Okay.
And Gary Ray isn't considered gay. He doesn't consider himself gay. It was just a way to make money. And his thing was just to allow men to perform oral sex on him. He says he did not engage in gay sex.
Okay.
Now, there are a lot of people who dispute that. But once again, there's a lot of the world according to Gary Ray and the world according to the authorities.
He said, he said.
He said, he said.
Yeah.
But Gary Ray tells everybody he's heterosexual, he's interested in women, and in fact, he's going to have several relationships over the years with women, and he even lives with some of them. But in June of 1982, when he has a girlfriend, her name is Wesley, he rapes and batters her in Hillsborough County, Florida. And when he attacks her, he bites her breast, he leaves a mark, he beats her in the face, giving her a black and swollen eye.
Wow.
She had internal injuries to her vagina and anus. He leaves imprints around her neck of his fingers because he's been strangling her. That's called foreshadowing.
Dun, dun, dun.
And when the abuse is investigated, authorities noted that the bathroom had a significant amount of blood. The bathroom where they lived had a ton of blood in it, and there were blood spatters on the walls of the bedroom that reached as high as 5 feet above the bed. And I saw where one of the authorities who investigated the rape and battering of Wesley said that he had seen corpses in the morgue look better than her when she came into the hospital.
Jeez.
So Gary Ray is arrested and sentenced to 3 years in prison, but he's released in two. He then moved to Washington, D.C., and he was charged with possession of weed in 1984. This charge is later dropped. He then lived in the Fairfax, Alexandria area from 1984 to 1986. Then in 1991, he moves to Daytona Beach, Florida, and goes back to being a sex worker for gay men. Gary Ray also gets another girlfriend. She gets pregnant, and when she discovers that he is a sex worker, she has an abortion. And this, according to Gary Ray himself, this is the moment when he begins to blame gay men that he's prostituting himself for the abortion of his child. So did you catch that? It's a little sick and twisted. It's not his fault that he's prostituting himself. It's the gay men that he's prostituting himself to. When his girlfriend finds out, he blames them.
Gotcha.
It seems a bit far-fetched to me, but Gary says that this is what led to the rest of his life being so violent. Also in the summer of 1991, he snatches a cocktail waitress's purse in Volusia County, Florida, and he pushes her down, takes her handbag, and gets away with $70 and a pair of sunglasses. And he's out on probation, so of course he goes back to jail for $70 and a pair of sunglasses.
Hope they were good sunglasses.
Well, I don't know that they were, but he's sentenced to 4 more years. He only serves 2. When he's out again, the first 6 months, he's really trying to clean up his act. And Gary Ray comes to all of his appointments with his probation officer. And his only frustration, according to his probation officer's notes, was that he couldn't get a decent paying job.
Okay.
So we went back to quick $20 tricks with older men in gay bars. And after his release, Gary Ray got himself a small apartment. He spent time with a friend who'd picked him up from prison. And this anonymous retiree said that Gary Ray was giddy at his freedom. So he's out and he's trying to walk the straight and narrow.
Sure.
But he can't get a decent paying job.
Right.
He's got an 8th grade education, no GED. You would think that maybe he would do some of that in prison, but apparently he did not. Because I think I would have found that. But he just can't. He can't get his life together. He can't get his act together.
Right.
The first 3 months after his release, Gary Ray was hanging out at the Beachside Club on Main Street in Daytona Beach. It was a gay bar well known for its drag shows and wet jockey shorts contest, which is, you know, you got to have the opposite of a wet t-shirt contest.
Sure.
So I guess you just wet them down in their jockey shorts.
Well, there you go.
According to one of the bartenders, Gary Ray usually sat in the bar in the morning hours when the patrons were older men looking for conversation and the occasional tryst with a 20-something hustler, which is exactly what he was. And also, according to this bartender, Danny Kester, Gary Ray drank 7-Up. Like when he came into the bar in the first few weeks after his release. But then after making some money by allowing older men to perform oral sex on him, he started to drink again.
Gotcha.
So it's like a vicious cycle. He needs the money. He turns the trick. Then he feels bad about turning the trick. So he starts drinking, which means he needs more money.
He's in a constant downward spiral.
He is. He really is. But it's at this time that Gary Ray meets someone, a woman. Her name was Mary Long. Mary was about 10 years older than Gary Ray, and she worked at a fast food restaurant. Sometime between January and February of 1994, Gary Ray moved into a one-room apartment above a t-shirt shop on Main Street with Mary. The apartment was less than a block away from this beachside club. And according to lots of people, this romance blossomed quickly, and these two would walk hand in hand. Mary wanted to marry Gary Ray. That was hard to say. Mary wanted to marry Gary Ray, and Gary Ray wanted Mary to meet his mother.
Okay.
But on March 10th, Mary Long suddenly packed up and left Florida, saying she had a family crisis to attend to. And Gary is crushed. Gary Ray is crushed. And he told the building manager when he goes to pick up his things that his heart is broken.
Mm.
And Mary wrote a letter to Gary Ray's probation officer hoping that it would make it to Gary Ray. And here it is, quote, "From what Gary told me, he has felt a lot of rejection in his life. He has always felt he had no one to turn to for help of any kind. Please reassure him that I didn't turn my back on him and certainly didn't reject him. I think if he knows that there are people that sincerely love him and want to help him, this would help him in turning his life around. Hmm. End quote. So she left. I don't know if she didn't tell him she wasn't leaving, but it feels like it was a very abrupt.
That was going to be my question. I mean, why is she writing the probation officer instead of talking to Gary?
I know. Yeah. But she does. This is what she does. And that's the letter that gets to the probation officer because she knows it'll eventually get to him, or at least that's what she thinks.
Right.
But when Mary moves away from Florida, Gary Ray moves in with openly gay John Hardy Roberts, who is an insurance agent in Daytona Beach, Florida. Gary Ray and John had met in one of the Main Street gay bars in Daytona. John gave Gary Ray his phone number, and Gary Ray called him up. And John Roberts and the Daytona police were well acquainted because police had been called to his house at least 9 times between March of 1989 and May of 1993. This is well before Gary Ray Bowles had met him. Hmm. But most of these calls to the police were related to domestic disturbances involving John and his longtime live-in companion. But when said live-in companion was jailed on a burglary conviction a year before, John began cruising the gay bars and bringing young men back to his beachside house for companionship.
There you go.
For parties and companionship.
Okay.
And here we go. On March 14th, 1994, John Hardy Roberts brings Gary Ray Bowles back to his beachside home on the east side of town. According to Gary Ray, on that night, something unexpected happened. Gary Ray said that John wanted him to watch a video. It was a male-male video with a child. So it was two men, gay pornography, with a little boy. So it was child pornography.
Oh, geez.
And according to Gary, it was very shocking. Gary Ray said it was really shocking. It freaked him out, and it triggered a memory of him being a little kid. And Gary Ray snapped. There's a violent struggle at some point, and John's finger is nearly severed in this violent struggle. There's blood on the coffee table. There's blood on a lamp. He's lying in a pool of blood. And here's what happened. John was sitting on the couch, and he is struck from behind with the base of a lamp. Gary Ray just knocked his block off with the base of a lamp. Gary Ray beats John in the head with the lamp, then strangles him to death. Then he shoves a bloody white towel down John's throat, and he does so with such force that he destroys John's larynx.
Wow. Why did he do that?
Well, this is his signature. He's going to shove something down every single victim's throat.
So is he doing this from a psychological standpoint because he doesn't want them to speak or something?
I think he's doing it as retaliation. What does he do for $20? He allows men to give him oral sex.
Okay. Yeah,
so I think that. This is a retaliation.
Yeah.
You're going to put your mouth on me. I'm going to shove this down your throat.
There you go. I was going back to his childhood, but that makes more sense.
That's what I think, that's just me. And I've got a note in here somewhere where I'm going to say, that's just me. But I'm saying it now. I think that that's what it is.
Okay.
They have one lead. Police have one lead. They find out about 2 weeks prior that John had met a new man at the bar, and the man was staying at John's house. But he's disappeared, he's long gone, and he's locked the doors on the way out. And the police have to actually break a window to get into John Hardy Roberts' home. But they realize that because the door is locked from the inside, that this isn't a stranger. This is someone he knows, someone who has keys. And Gary Ray had taken John Hardy Roberts' credit cards and his car, a little red convertible. What he did leave behind, near the body, under an upturned table, is his probation papers.
Oops.
Probation papers that say Gary Ray Bowles. It's got his damn name on it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, if you're going to forget something, you probably shouldn't forget your probation
papers. Well, he's murdered and ransacked the whole place and leaves behind something with his name on it.
All he needs is a hand with a finger and a spring pointing to himself.
If it was a Looney Tunes cartoon, exactly. That's what it would be.
Oh, man.
So Daytona Beach police identify Gary Ray Bowles, a 32-year-old small-time felon with a long rap sheet, as the suspect in the murder of John Hardy Roberts. So it should be easy, right? He's a convicted felon who served time. They have photos and fingerprints, right?
Yeah.
They call his probation officer who said, hey, he was just here 5 days ago like he was supposed to be. Mm. Well, not so fast.
Yeah. That was 5 days.
Yeah. They focus on the missing wallet. John's ATM card is taken by the machine because Gary Ray goes to an ATM, tries to get cash out, and puts in the wrong PIN number so many times that it keeps his ATM card. And, you know, when you are at the ATM, you got a camera on you. So there's surveillance video right away, and they can see it's Gary Ray Bowles.
Smile.
And that image matches his booking photos. And John's credit cards are being used through Atlanta to Nashville, Tennessee. And after that, there's no more credit card activity. He has slipped through their fingers.
Wow.
So they can't find him anywhere. He's disappeared. And where has he gone? Well, he went to visit his mama. He went to visit his mom.
Okay.
And that's just one day after killing John Hardy Roberts. Gary Ray drives John's red convertible to Nashville, Tennessee, where he abandons the car and catches a bus to his mom's house near Branson, Missouri.
Okay.
Now, when Gary Ray makes it to his mother's house, Frances Carol Pace, he makes it to her house. He was supposed to stay for a week. He says, hey, Mom, I'm here for a week.
Right.
But on the second day he's there, police arrive to say that he's wanted for a probation violation in Florida. You know, they're like, where could he be?
Sure.
Well, this is his mom's address. This is, you know, let's go talk to her. But Gary Ray's not at his mom's house when they show up, and his mom gives him a heads up. And then gives him money to take the bus back to Florida.
Oh, wow.
She aids and abets. She lets him go.
Yeah, Mom's going to be in trouble.
But Gary Ray isn't heading back to the Sunshine State. Instead, he spends the next 3 weeks in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Gary Ray meets David Allen Jarman, a 39-year-old loan processor from Wheaton, Maryland. These two meet at a bar in the DuPont Circle area. On April 13th, Gary Ray beats and strangles David in the basement of his apartment on Georgia Avenue in Wheaton. He leaves him dead on the side of his bed, and shoved down his throat after he strangles him is a sex toy.
Mm.
David's car and wallet had been stolen. The same day, David Jarman's credit card is swiped at a Baltimore hotel, and the handwriting on the registration card will be a match to Gary Ray Bowles.
Wow.
Now, they're not going to realize that David Jarman is a victim of Gary Ray for a long time.
Why not?
He's going to be very busy in Florida and in the Carolinas, but not so much like in D.C. They're not really, they're thinking of him down south, but he's all the way up the coast in Washington, D.C.
And what year is this?
This is 1994.
Yeah, I mean, so there's communication between states and law enforcement agencies. So how many killers do they have out there that are shoving things down murder victims' throats?
You are making a very good point, and we're going to talk about that in just a second.
Okay.
Hold on.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
You're getting ahead of me.
Sorry. I'm good at that.
You are. Milton Joseph Bradley is born on September 16th, 1921 in Savannah, Georgia. He's the son of Aaron and Hannah Miller Bradley. He had three younger siblings, Raymond, Eddie, and Denny. In World War II, Milton served in the U.S. Navy.
Okay.
And while serving in the Navy, he suffered a severe head injury when his ship sank in the Pacific Ocean. And he later had a partial lobotomy.
Oh, wow.
So that whole sentence just intrigued me beyond belief. And I went digging and I couldn't find out which ship he was on that sank.
So if he had a lobotomy, was he functioning?
Partial lobotomy.
Okay. All right.
And he's very childlike because of it.
Gotcha.
At 72 years old, he's very well known in Savannah, Georgia. He liked to pop into a lot of bars in the city. He would walk to the bar or he would take a cab because he couldn't drive his car.
Sure.
Since his head injury and his lobotomy. But he enjoyed walking through the historic squares and parks around the city of Savannah. And Savannah is beautiful. Rob and I both love Savannah. It's a gorgeous town.
Yep.
But his family's really well known in this town because they had owned and operated a lock and key shop in downtown Savannah since 1883.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And this is where Milton usually hung out during the day. He was known for his generosity. He liked to help people who needed a buck on the street. And he had even adopted a family in Sri Lanka to whom he sent money and got letters and photos in return.
Wow, that's amazing.
He was just a really good guy, but he was very childlike because of his partial lobotomy. But Milton's family, they kept him on a budget because he was 100% disabled. His family gave him $25 a day. He got an allowance, and he could use that $25 however he wanted. Hmm. It's not like he carried around a lot of money or had access to the cash register at the lock and key store. He had $25 with him. Milton is also a painter. And I have seen pictures that he has painted. And he has a roommate slash friend who he lives with off and on. And his roomie had a drinking problem. And Milton would kick him in and out of the apartment. He would let him come back in, then he would drink too much, and then he would kick him out.
Right.
And on the night of May 3rd, 1994, Milton has stopped in a gay bar known as Faces.
Okay.
And most thought that Milton was asexual, and many of his friends believed that he wasn't at Faces to pick up men. He was just childlike and naive, and he was nice, and everybody in town knew him and loved him. He was the kind of guy who would talk to anybody, but on this night in particular, he was an easy target for Gary Ray Bowles.
Right.
Gary had been in Savannah a couple of days and had been coming to Faces, the bar. He would ask customers to buy him drinks. And on the night of May 3rd, he was chatting up Milton, and patrons noticed that Gary Ray was putting his hand on Milton's leg. He was flirting with him.
Right.
And these two leave the bar together. Mm. Now, according to Gary Ray, Milton would not shut up after they left the bar, and it, quote, got creepy, end quote. And he thought, quote, I'm going to f*** this guy up, end quote. Mm. Gary Ray drives to the Savannah Golf Club. He takes him to a remote area, a shed where they keep golf carts. He takes him behind the shed at the golf club, and he beats the absolute hell out of him, strangles him, and then shoves leaves and dirt down his throat.
Wow.
And walks away.
Wow.
An hour later, Gary Ray goes back to the bar alone. He sits at the bar, has a cocktail, and according to Gary Ray, he felt relief.
Hmm.
And it's at this moment he realizes that he wants to kill as many people as possible before they catch him.
Wow.
Can you imagine murdering someone and then walking away from that? I mean, it was a violent death. I'm about to tell you about it. But walking back into the bar and just sitting down at the bar like nothing had happened.
Yeah, and the fact that Milton,
yes,
they probably didn't have any exchange with each other from a sexual standpoint, but he just decided he was going to kill him.
Yes, there was no sexual exchange.
Yeah, so he's just in it for the kill now.
He's just in it for the kill.
Okay.
I think he thought he could get some money from him because he was a conservative guy. I think he was really well-dressed,
right.
But he only had $25 in his pocket. Mm. That was it.
Yeah.
The next morning, May 4th, at the Savannah Golf Club, the mosquito control person is walking the course grounds. She's spraying when she happens upon Milton Bradley's body behind this maintenance shed on the remote part of the golf course. Okay. She calls 911. Captain John Best, he's pretty new to the homicide department at this time, but he's on the case. Milton, as I said before, is conservatively dressed. He's on his back against the side of this shed, and there are marks on the storage shed that let police know that there was a big struggle, and they think that because of the way the leaves are disturbed and the blood spatter that is on the shed, that Milton had died there. Mm. So they're thinking he wasn't killed someplace else and then brought here.
Yeah.
He died right here by this shed.
Right.
Milton had been beaten. There was blood and bruising on his face. His pant pockets were turned inside out. Police think it's a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
But coming out of his mouth are leaves and dirt. And he's miles away from his usual stomping ground, the old historic Savannah Town Square area.
Right.
So everyone's like, somebody took him.
Right.
Somebody took Milton to the golf course.
And they had a lot of witnesses in the bar.
Now, I told you there was an obvious struggle at the scene, but what I didn't tell you is that there's a palm print left behind on the side of the white shed in blood, and Gary Ray has left his fingerprints. And when Milton is examined during autopsy, his face has been severely beaten and he'd been strangled, and also the dirt and leaves in his mouth. Well, they weren't just in his mouth. The dirt had been crammed all the way down his windpipe.
Jeez.
There was a lot of rage in the killing of Milton. So he's been bludgeoned, strangled so hard that the bones in his neck are crushed, and then his mouth stuffed and his windpipe stuffed with leaves and dirt. It's overkill, basically.
Wow. Wow.
Because this is a 72-year-old man. Yeah. How much of a struggle could he put up?
Right.
And he's had a partial lobotomy.
Sure.
They bring in the roommate. Police call in Milton's roommate, and they ask him, when was the last time you saw Milton? And he said, why do you want to know? And they tell him Milton is dead. And he breaks down. Mm. He starts crying. Yeah. And they rule out the roommate as the killer because he had an alibi. And he also couldn't drive. He didn't have a driver's license.
Gotcha.
They run the handprint trying to get a hit and they get nothing, which doesn't make sense to me. Mm. So Savannah police put together the facts about the case and get it out to the other areas.
Okay.
There's an older guy. He's been strangled, beaten, and he's had leaves and dirt crammed down his throat. They don't get any hits. Nothing. Mm.
Okay.
Later, when they ask Gary Ray, why did you take Milton to the golf course? He replied, quote, I got a bad vibe from the guy, end quote.
What?
Yeah.
Listen, I get bad vibes from people, but doesn't mean I'm going to go kill them.
Yeah. Well, I just avoid them. I get bad vibes all the time from people. And I'm just like, not today, Satan.
Yeah.
Back up.
Yeah.
Back up, back off, not today. Satan. You know, sometimes it's like, okay, Satan, today.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's like, not today, Satan. Days later, Gary Ray makes his way 3.5 hours from Savannah to Atlanta. As soon as he would kill, he would leave. And according to Gary Ray, he had a lot of cold nights when he didn't have a place to sleep.
No.
To which I said, I even wrote in here, I'm so sorry, Gary Ray. You've been killing people and then you don't have a place to sleep.
It makes it all right now.
Yeah. By this time, he's had about 20 years of working as a male prostitute. It's really the only thing he knows how to do. Hmm. But now he's killing, and he's getting good at that, too. May 12, 1994, Alverson Carter Jr. He was a 47-year-old man who lived in Atlanta, Georgia. I also read that he had spent some years in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. There's not a lot known about Alverson, and I promise you I looked. He lived on Monet Court, Northwest in Atlanta, and his brother Robert became concerned when no one had heard from him since Mother's Day on May 8th. Hmm. Alverson was found stabbed 7 times, covered with blankets and pillows on the bedroom floor. There was no sexual assault, but he had on a t-shirt and a towel was wrapped around his neck and shoved down his throat.
Oh, geez. Signature.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Savannah, police are starting to put out this information, hoping that another crime with similar evidence and circumstances is out there. But we just keep going. May 18th, 1994, just days later, 6 days later, Albert Morris, Al, lives in Hilliard, Florida, which is near Jacksonville. Gary Ray is cruising gay bars and is going by the name at the time, Joey Pearson. Mm. And Joey meets 37-year-old Al Morris, who works at his parents' convenience store. He's known as a very fun-loving, sweet, kind person. But these two, Al and Gary Ray, who says his name is Joey.
How you doing?
How you doing, being Joey?
Sorry.
They're at this gay bar, and Al picks him up and brings him home and agrees to let him live there temporarily in exchange for helping him out around the house. He actually lives in a trailer, but I read that he wanted help feeding his goats and that Al had a roof that also needed fixing.
Okay.
So that was their agreement. Joey, instead of Gary Ray, Joey goes home with Al to his trailer. And in exchange for room and board, he's going to feed the goats and he's going to work on the roof.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Al has told his friend, Jackie Strickland, that he thought that he had found, quote, the one. So Al really, really liked Gary Ray or Joey.
Yeah. So Gary was, he was fairly charismatic. Or?
He's a charismatic guy. He's not a bad looking guy either. I mean, he's a hustler.
Sure.
So he knows how to make people feel good about themselves and yeah.
He knows how to get what he wants.
Yes. He knows how to get exactly what he wants. But Al has told his friend Jackie that he thinks that Joey is the one. And here's the story that Joey Pearson is telling everybody. He's a carpenter by trade, and he's from the D.C. area and only in Jacksonville for vacation. And while these two are living together, Al asks his friend Jackie if he could give Joey, Gary Ray, mm-hmm. a ride. So Jackie's got him in his car. He's making small talk with Gary Ray, who's watching the landscape as they're driving along. And when Jackie asks Gary Ray if he's going to stay with Al and do the work around the trailer, he tells Jackie that he's going to do a little bit of construction and then he's going to move on. Hmm. But then out of the blue, Gary Ray asks Jackie to pull the car over. And Jackie stops the car, and Gary Ray jumps out of the car, and he's running toward the woods that are off on the side of the road, and he's pointing to something, and he's yelling, "Hey, come look at this. Come check this out. Look at this." And Gary Ray is trying really hard to get Jackie Strickland out of the car. And Jackie Strickland's like, not today, Satan. Not today, Satan. No way.
I may be dumb, but I'm not stupid.
Yeah, and in fact, he said, quote, "All of a sudden, from up above, I guess the voice of God came into my head and told me not to get out of the car, and I heard it two times in my head, and I immediately felt that I couldn't trust him," end quote.
Good man.
So he's obviously trying to lure Jackie into the woods. Jackie's not budging. I would have driven off and left his ass. I mean, if I heard that in my ear, I would have been like, see ya. But on May 17th, 1994, at some point in the day or night, it's been about a week since these two met, Gary Ray and Al has had enough. Gary Ray hasn't done anything around the house to help. No feeding the goats, no working on the roof. And Al realizes that he's being taken advantage of.
Right.
And in fact, Al had told Jackie that he'd had enough of Gary Ray, a.k.a. Joey's bullshit.
Yep.
And these two go to a couple of bars. There's a lot of tension between the two of them. And then all of a sudden, there's an argument. And Joey's not living up to his responsibilities. They have a straight-up barroom brawl with Joey giving Al a bloody nose.
Oh, wow.
And Al's friend Jackie said that he broke up the fight about three times. And Al said, "I'm taking him home with me, and he's going to do this work that he promised me."
That's probably not going to happen.
That's going to be a bad idea.
Yeah.
And when they get to Al's house, Gary Ray decides it's time to kill Al.
Yeah.
And there's a horrible struggle. He beats him with the barrel and the butt end of a shotgun. Then he shoots him point blank in the stomach.
Jeez.
He strangles him, and then he shoves a kitchen towel down his throat.
Jeez.
After he kills Al, he starts searching his trailer for what he can steal or take with him.
Right.
And in Al's closet is a wallet. A wallet that belongs to a guy that Al knew. His name, Timothy Whitfield.
Okay.
And inside Timothy's wallet is Timothy's driver's license, Timothy's birth certificate, and his social security card.
So,
I mean, what are the chances?
Well, I'm going to say, so he's no longer Joey.
He's no longer Joey. He's going to become Timothy Whitfield.
Yep.
Gary Ray takes his wallet. He takes Al's car, a blue 1986 Cadillac, and his credit cards along with the wallet. He drives away. He goes straight to the DMV. He tells them, "I've lost my driver's license," and he officially becomes Timothy Ronald Whitfield.
Wow. What was he doing with that wallet then?
I have no idea, and it was never explained to me, but apparently it was just a friend's wallet that was at the house. I don't know if Timothy Whitfield was alive or dead or what had happened to him, but who leaves their driver's license, their birth certificate, and their social security card behind someplace?
Yeah.
So I mean, who carries that around with them?
You couldn't find anything out about Timothy?
No.
Hmm.
No.
Hmm. Wow.
But maybe the real Timothy Whitfield didn't want anything found out about him.
Timothy, if you're out there, let us know.
On May 18th, 1994, Albert's parents go to his house because he hasn't shown up for work and they're worried. And what they find is a ransacked home with blood everywhere. And in the middle of the floor, face down, is their son, Al Morris.
Wow.
They call 911 to say they think that he's dead. There's been a struggle. There's blood all over the place. He had defensive wounds on his arms and hands. I'd already told you he'd been shot in the stomach and he'd been strangled. His pockets are inside out. And the police notice that he has this towel shoved down his throat.
Right.
And again, there's a palm print on the TV, on the entertainment center. That's what they feel like is their one lead.
Right.
Police follow the blood trail down the hallway all the way to the shower, where it looks like Gary Ray took a shower after beating Al to death. And Jackie Strickland tells police, "All you got to do is find Joey Pearson."
Yeah.
But there is no Joey Pearson, right?
Right.
So police want to meet this Joey Pearson guy. They run a background check. There's no criminal history. They create a composite sketch, and they trace Al's credit cards and get a hit at a Walmart in Jacksonville, Florida. And this is also where they find the blue Cadillac that he has abandoned in the parking lot, which is exactly what he did with a little red convertible.
Right.
So the Nassau County Police Department start digging through information looking for something, for anything. And what they find is an old NCIC teletype to all police agencies with the description of the murder of Milton Bradley from Savannah. Mm-hmm. And what do Al and Milton have in common? Well, they've both been strangled, and one had leaves and dirt shoved down his throat, and the other had a towel shoved down his throat. And that is something really distinct.
Yeah.
So the Nassau County Police give the boys in Savannah a little ringy-dingy on May 26, 1994 in Savannah, Georgia. And they meet with the Savannah Police and they say, we think we got something in common with you guys. And they start going through their notes collectively. They're comparing Milton Bradley's death to Al Morris's death. The two men were both seen with someone who was described as a drifter and a guy who frequented gay bars. The composite photo that they have of, quote, Joey in Jacksonville, Florida, matches the description of the man who was with Milton in Savannah, and Detective John Best of Savannah takes a Sharpie and draws a mustache on the composite, and boom, he's like,
that's the guy.
This is the same guy. Yeah. And the light bulbs finally start going off, and they're both thinking, we've got ourselves a serial killer.
Right.
So it's time to call in the FBI.
Right.
So they take the composite drawing with the Sharpie mustache to the bar in Savannah, and the regulars there, they all say, yeah, that's him. That's Gary Ray. Yeah. And a guy named Scrubs comes forward and says, hey, I spent the day with Gary Ray the day before Milton was killed. And Scrubs tells police that the two of them went to a convenience store near the Savannah Golf Club and got some beers. And you know what they have in convenience stores? Cameras. Mm. And the convenience store has a surveillance camera, and the police can get the footage. And there on the tape is Scrubs and Gary Ray Bowles. And they send this video to Hilliard, Florida and Nassau County. And Jackie Strickland watches it and says, yeah, that's Joey. That's him. That's the guy that killed Al.
How you doing?
So they're putting all the pieces together little by little.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they have a positive idea of a suspect, but they don't know his name. And they're thinking he's probably going to kill again. And the problem is they're way far behind on Gary Ray's murders already.
Right.
So when the FBI gets involved, they show them all the evidence. And the discussion is all about shoving stuff down the throat. And the FBI creates a profile. And here it is. He's a drifter and a user. He uses people. He's a parasite. He meets men, uses them for whatever they can give him. Drinks, food, a place to live, money, and then he kills them. And the stuffing of the mouth, here we go. According to a forensic neuropsychologist, Dr. John Fabian, it's something very personal like the strangling, and he says it could be based on deep-rooted anger and rage that is represented by the killer's disdain towards gay men.
Oh, wow.
Or, like I said before, if you're me, and you, like, read Freud. You read all the Freud stuff when you were in college psychology.
Right.
He does it because he's angry at the world because of his life and himself. And he'd prostituted himself to gay men with oral sex and allowing them to perform oral sex on him or vice versa. But that was just what was going through my head when I was doing all the research.
Right.
Yeah. You shove something down my throat, I'm going to shove something down your throat.
Gotcha.
And even though he has always said that he only received oral sex, we don't know that for certain.
Right.
That's his story. I'm heterosexual. I'm not gay. I only received oral sex.
Right.
You know, there are two truths here. We never really know. There's Gary Ray's story, and then there's, you know, the truth.
Sure.
2 days later, Daytona Beach calls and says, hey, let me tell you about John Roberts, because that was the very first murder.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that their guy is Gary Ray Bowles.
Right.
And suddenly he's on wanted posters. He's on TV. He's on the FBI's most wanted list. But Gary Ray Bowles is now Tim Whitfield, and he's laying low.
Hmm.
But he looks like himself. And someone calls in and says, hey, I think I've seen this guy in the Jacksonville Beach area. He lives in a rooming house.
Wow.
And the cops come at 3 a.m., kick down the door. They search his room. He shows them all his IDs, the birth certificate, driver's license, social security. And they think they've got the wrong guy.
Oh, man.
And they walk away from Gary Ray.
Wow.
Saying, we're so sorry, Mr. Whitfield. We didn't mean to break your door down at 3 a.m. We got some bad info.
Wow.
but he looks just like him. But all of his papers, including his social security number.
And they have palm prints too, don't they?
It's Timothy Whitfield, but they didn't take his fingerprints. He's got all the stuff that shows that he's Tim Whitfield.
Wow.
So why would they take him to the station and print him? Unless they had probable cause. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Yeah. So they don't.
Yeah. Yep.
Nothing happens for 6 months. For 6 months, Gary Ray is quiet. No more murders. He's been on America's Most Wanted TV show. His face has been on the cover of magazines. He's posted in gay bars everywhere. Hmm. They would put his picture on the front door in gay bars. Have you seen this man?
Wow.
But Gary Ray's nowhere to be found. He's pretty confident that he's not ever gonna get caught after the police show up at his door and he's like, hey, that's not me. They're like, oh, you're right. It's not you.
Yeah.
Bolsters his confidence. November 1994, Walter J. Hinton. Jay was 42 years old and a floral designer. And in early November of 1994, Gary Ray meets Jay at Jacksonville Beach. These two engage in homosexual activity sometime shortly after they meet. They spend a couple days together, and after about a week, Jay was moving to a new home, a trailer on Coral Drive in Duval County, and Gary Ray is helping Jay move his things into the new place.
Okay.
And Jay asks Gary Ray if he wants to live with him for just a little bit while he gets his feet on the ground.
Hmm.
So this is a temporary thing.
Just like the others.
Just like the others. And of course, Gary Ray says, you betcha.
Yeah.
And these two move in together for about 2 weeks. But Gary Ray is nasty to a female friend of Jay's. And Gary Ray and Jay get into it. And Jay says, you can pack your sorry ass.
And get out.
Get out.
Yep.
And he does leave, but all is forgiven. And Gary Ray is permitted to come back to the trailer to live with Jay.
And that will be his last mistake.
It is.
Yeah.
On November 15th, Gary Ray, Jay, and a friend named Rick had all been partying. Jay is off at work, and Gary Ray and Rick have been drinking and smoking weed all day. And when Jay makes it home, they just keep on keeping on. They keep the party going. At around 8 p.m. that night, Jay drives Rick to the train station, and Gary Ray is riding in the back seat. They wait for the train, and these three drink some beers, smoke some more weed. And Rick's later going to say that Gary Ray is pretty drunk, but he's completely coherent. And Rick catches his train, and Gary Ray and Jay go back to Jay's trailer and continue to drink. Jay puts himself to bed and leaves Gary Ray in the living room area of the trailer. And then, according to Gary Ray, something snaps inside of him.
Wow.
He goes outside the trailer and picks up a cinder block, a paver. We have these around our house.
Yeah.
Big, heavy cinder block paver. He brings it inside the trailer. He places it on the coffee table. He takes a moment to think about it. And then he carries this big stone, this big rock, into Jay's bedroom. Jay's asleep in his bed, and Gary Ray drops the cinder block paver on his head.
Jeez.
Now, it wakes Jay up, and he's stunned by what's happening. And these two struggle. As I'm sure Jay's trying to save himself,
right.
But then Gary Ray stuffs Jay's mouth with first toilet paper and then a bright red rag.
Mm.
Then Gary Ray strangles Jay and leaves the stone on the bed. When Jay is dead, Gary Ray takes the keys to Jay's car and he drives away.
Wow.
But it's been 6 months and the other crimes have already happened. They're not immediately making the connection to the murders. When I read that, I was like, come on, really? But then you have to think about it. There are people who are being murdered and crimes happening every single day. So it starts to pile up, I'm sure.
Yeah, but this has a definite fingerprint to it.
It does have a definite fingerprint to it, but they weren't immediately making the connection for some reason.
Well, and too, this is back in the early 90s.
This is mid-90s, 1994. Yeah.
Things are a lot different now.
True. When they process this crime scene, what they find is a pay stub. A pay stub to Timothy Whitfield.
Mm.
This guy can't keep his things with his name on, and you know, fake or real name, out of the evidence bags for some reason.
Right.
So police are like, who the hell is Timothy Whitfield? They called the place where he worked, which was the Day Labor Office. And they call and say, hey, this is the Jacksonville, Florida Sheriff's Office. And if he shows back up again, you give us a ringy-ding.
Right.
We want to talk to him.
Right.
Don't let him go anywhere. Call us.
Right.
And he does. 2 days later, in strolls Tim Whitfield. And the day labor office calls and the police go to the labor pool. And Tim, Gary Ray, says, yeah, you can question me. I'll go peacefully. Let's go talk. Because he's got all this confidence.
Sure.
You know, he's got all his credentials. I'm Tim Whitfield.
Yeah.
He was very calm. He said that he knew Jay Hinton, but he hadn't seen him in days. He says he didn't have anything to do with the murder of Jay. They interrogate him for 12 hours straight. And police are in his face yelling. They're screaming at him, stop lying.
Oh,
stop
man.
Lying. We know you're lying. Stop lying. Well, they don't know if he's lying or not.
Sure.
They just kind of have a...
They're trying to force his hand.
Yes, and they have a gut feeling that something's going on. There's something more to this guy.
Right.
And Gary Ray stands up and gets about an inch away from the interrogator's face and says, you want to know the truth? Do you really want to know the truth? I'm Gary Ray Bowles. That's who I am. Gary Ray Bowles. I'm a wanted man.
Wow. You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth. And then he said, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad it's over.
Wow.
And finally, he is arrested on October 22nd, 1994, for the murder of Walter J. Hinton. And according to him, he stayed in one place too long because he killed Jay and he didn't leave town.
Jeez.
He went back to work at the labor pool.
Yeah.
He sits in this interrogation room and confesses to not four, but six murders, including Atlanta and Maryland.
Wow.
Quote, I didn't want to kill nobody. I don't know why I did, but I did. I didn't plan to become a serial killer. End quote.
Does anybody plan to be a serial killer?
I mean, I don't think so. But according to Gary Ray, it all started with the video that John Hardy Roberts had with the two men and the small boy, the porn video.
Right.
It started with the porn video, and after he killed him, it became easier and easier. And he said that the video caused him to flash back to his childhood, the two gay males having sex with the little boy. But according to police, when they bagged the evidence at that crime scene, there was no pornographic tape.
Oh, wow.
There was no pornographic tape.
Did he take it with him, or did it just not exist?
Don't know.
Oh, okay.
We don't know. He says it existed. There was nothing there. There was no evidence to show that it did.
Or was he just thinking back to his childhood?
Was he thinking back to his childhood? Did he make it all up just so he could kill the first victim?
Right.
We know that he hates men from an early age because he's an abused child. And his mother chose these men over him, these alcoholic, abusive men. So he felt like it was some sort of sense of justice to him.
Right.
And at 14... he had sex with this man in his van to get money in his pocket, and he's completely straight, but he did make money. The suffocation, well, apparently he wanted to make them suffer until their last breath. And I believe that he did.
Yeah.
Gary Ray was found guilty of 3 counts of murder, 1, and sentenced to death on December 8th, 1994. But that sentence was overturned in 1999. It was reversed by the Florida Supreme Court. But he was given a new sentencing on October 11th, 2001. And again, he received the death penalty.
Okay.
Now, Gary Ray didn't fall into the assessment or diagnosis of what a serial killer is like, but he was off the charts. He was off the charts in terms of what a serial killer is capable of. So he was a manipulator, and once he started killing, he really liked it, and he couldn't stop.
Right.
Quote, I'm sad to say it, but it's not hard to kill somebody. You can kill somebody pretty easy if you have the mindset for it. End quote.
Wow.
But what is that mindset? And here's what he said the mindset was, quote, emptiness. The people that I've killed, they were all connected in the same way. In my mind, they all got what they deserved. I thought it was the right thing to do, end quote.
Well, there's some twisted thinking.
Gary Ray Bowles died on August 22nd, 2019 by lethal injection at the Florida State Prison in Railford. His last meal, 3 cheeseburgers, French fries, and bacon.
Wow. I'm thinking if my last meal, it's not going to be 3 cheeseburgers.
And when I read that, I wanted to say, I hope somebody shoved them down his throat.
My question, though, he only got sentenced for 3 murders.
Yes.
But he confessed to 6. I wonder what happened there.
Well, because he got the death penalty.
Yeah.
It's time and money in the court system.
Gotcha.
So because he got the death penalty, they're like, sense. We got him. Yeah. Let's just do it. He's going to die. He's going to rot in Florida. And he did. And then he was, you know, died by lethal injection.
I just think about the families that he wasn't convicted for.
Yeah.
And how it made them feel.
Well, I've seen interviews with all of the family. They all wanted him dead.
Yeah.
And when the Supreme Court overturned it, there were a lot of people who were very upset because the people that he killed were all good people.
Yeah, especially Milton.
Especially Milton. Yeah, they were all very good people that everyone seemed to love and had lots of good friends. And yeah.
Right.
But that is the story of Gary Ray Bowles. And that's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners, this is Chris Calvert. I love doing research and writing about real crimes, but I also love writing about fictional people who commit horrible atrocities. When you're ready to take a break from true crime for fictional crime, go to chriscalvert.com, where you'll find all my books, including some free ones to get you started. Jane Doe is one badass chick who quietly hunts terrorists in the United States. The Sex and Lies books are all FBI and CIA cases with a little romance on the side. And coming summer 2022, book 10 in the series, Sex, Lies, and Rock and Roll, releases. You can find all of these books everywhere, and if you like to listen instead of read, you can find them all on Audible. So go grab a free book or take a listen. I love all the characters I've written. I've given them pain, ruined their lives, make them suffer, and maybe even throw in a heroic death. Or maybe they live to fight another day. Check it all out at chriscalvert.com. And thanks for being a listener of Hitched to Homicide.
Well, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a lot, wasn't it?
Well, I'm just glad that Gary is no longer with us.
Gary got exactly what he deserved, except for, like I said, I would have loved it if someone would have shoved 3 cheeseburgers down his throat.
3 cheeseburgers in paradise.
Me. Yeah. That's me.
Okay, well, let's lighten it up and just do a little bless your heart. What do you think?
I'm ready.
All right.
Let's
here we
do
go.
It.
Dateline Madison, Wisconsin. This action figure fan doesn't play when it comes to his dolls.
Wait. Hang on. I need some lip gloss.
Speaking of dolls.
Speaking of action figures.
Spider-Man.
There's my Spider-Man lip gloss.
Yeah, for those of you that aren't watching the video.
Yeah, you'll have to watch it on YouTube.
Police said a 34-year-old Wisconsin man reportedly went on a violent rampage because he believed his 46-year-old wife damaged some of his toys, news station WMTV reported. In response to the possible damage, the husband, whom authorities haven't identified, allegedly tore through his Madison home with a log-splitting axe, destroying his own property. There you go.
Because he thought that she did what?
She messed with his toys. I get it. No, I'm kidding.
You have no action figure toys.
I know.
His guitars, we have lots of guitars.
Yeah, don't touch my guitars. His furniture, laptop, and television were among the $5,000 in damage caused during the meltdown, authorities said.
Wait, so he had an axe and he's tearing up his house over action figures?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. The path of destruction didn't end until he got the axe stuck in the family's car's windshield, according to WMTV. Jeez, you can't make this stuff up. The suspect then moved outside and smashed the family car, chopping off both side mirrors and eventually striking the windshield with such force that the axe became stuck, police said.
Nice.
Yeah. The action figure collector ultimately called 911 on himself, officials said. He reportedly told detectives that he was drinking too much. Well,
yes,
there's a surprise.
Frank.
He was drinking too much, then overreacted when he thought his wife destroyed his figures.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He's serious right now.
I know. The husband was arrested and booked at Dane County Jail on several charges, including disorderly conduct.
But nobody touched his stuff, right?
I guess not.
It's like, did you touch my drum set?
What's that from? Don't say it. Let somebody put it in there.
Well, we've had a moment here in this house. Did you touch my... Who touched my guitar? Somebody has touched a guitar.
Okay.
Nobody touches the guitars anymore, I promise. Yeah, yeah. I promise.
You can touch the cheap ones, but not the
expensive. You don't have a cheap one. Whatever. 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 Well, if you have a Bless Your Heart, you can send it to us at chris@hitchtohomicide.com. I don't look at them. I just forward them. Make sure you put in there, it's a Bless Your Heart. I just send it straight to Rob. That yep. way, I don't know whose heart needs blessing from week to week. But if you need your heart blessed or you know somebody who does, send it on.
Bring it on, baby.
That's it. That's all we have this week for Hitch to Homicide. That's my wonderful husband.
And that's my beautiful bride.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.
Don't touch my drum set.